Hey, welcome to the Pachanga and Possibility Podcast, the podcast where we celebrate the power of healing and transformation. I am your host, Natalie Calzadilla. Each week, I'll be interviewing experts that will inspire you to discover your soul's purpose and create a fulfilling life. I'll also be sharing some spiritual coaching along the way and personal adventures as I enter this new phase in my life as a mother and entrepreneur. All right, mi gente, grab your cafecito and a notebook. Let's get started.
Welcome back, folks, to a bonus episode of Pachanga and Possibility. So remember about one or two episodes back, I said that I was having my ass handed to me because of the podcast burnout and my dad dying and being a new mom and all the stuff that was going on. Well, since then, we're right now, we're in August. I don't even know what day or month it is anymore. Everything's a blur. We're in August, and I believe that episode about the podcast burnout was somewhere around February or March. And to sum it up, I was back then saying, oh my God, I'm going through burnout and blah, 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 and I'm having a hard time and I've had my ass handed to me. And then God was like, oh yeah, hold my beer. So, holy, holy, holy bananas. After that episode, never in a million years would I have imagined that I would end up in the hospital with my, at the time, 8-month-old baby, who went into diabetic ketoacidosis, which pretty much means her sugar was like off the charts and potentially fatal. I don't know anything about diabetes, or I didn't at the time at all. Like, no one near me has diabetes. Nobody in my family has type 1 diabetes, only type 2. And that's like the old people. I don't even really know what that means. I just know if you have too much sugar, you can mess things up. And that's pretty much the difference. So I'll start off before anybody gets judgy about, what are you feeding your child? How can a baby have diabetes? The difference between type 1 and type 2 is type 1 is an autoimmune disease. The body is attacking itself and it cannot make the insulin it needs in order to process the sugar. Type 2 is pretty much you pissed off your pancreas because you ate too much crap. Okay, and that's it. And you can manage type 2 even like without meds and just diet. Type 1 is autoimmune, body's attacking itself, and there is no cure, and you are insulin dependent for the rest of your life. There is also other forms of diabetes. Apparently, there's many within the group of type 1, of which one is called like infant diabetes, which is called Moody. And that can be managed with an oral tablet and no injections. However, she tested negative for that, and it was official that she has type 1 diabetes. But I'll share the journey of what happened and how this went down, because maybe, and I pray this is not the case, but maybe you, someone you know, or your kids or something, if you know what the symptoms are, you can at least have a heads up, because I've heard of other stories of other kids going into DKA, which with much more dangerous sugar levels than what Amara had. So Amara was like at 485. Mind you, normal is 70 to 120 for adults, meaning that if our pancreas is working okay, we can have a cake and our sugar still won't go above like 120. That is not the case for diabetics. they can just like look at sugar and it'll like skyrocket. Okay. So anyway, so this is what went down, and it still feels very surreal. I can't believe that it happened and that this is our new normal. But thankfully now I'm able to talk about it and we're thriving. But this is what went down that week into what happened leading to the day we made it into the ER, and then what transpired in the hospital. We were there for 10 days. And then what happened when we came home and kind of what's going on? What is our new normal? And before I get into the whole story, I just want to say season 2 is still going to happen. I'm behind schedule. Obviously, I wanted to launch season 2 on my birthday in September, but that is not going to be possible. And I'll get into those details later, but it's going to happen. I have not given up. I have everything lined up and ready to go. It just needs to come together financially. It really is what's holding me back, because I need to hire a virtual assistant in order to do all the production, because there's no way with my new normal that I can do the production part of the podcast. It's just way too much work. And I also launched an Etsy store. Recently, my partner was bothering me. Daryl was like, hey, you know, you have all of these illustrated characters and this whole thing sitting there for a few years now. You should launch an Etsy store. And I was like, meh, I don't know. And it's just like, I feel like it's money like sitting on the table. And he just kept bugging me about it. And I said, you know what? Fine. Fuck it. I will try it. It's something I can do that requires like no extroverted qualities for me, because I cannot be an extrovert when I am suffering emotionally and exhausted mentally, physically, and spiritually. I'm an introvert. I need to just be alone and recharge, and it's really hard for me to show up on social media and really hard for me to do intuitive readings or to do coaching with like just things that involve people and being on camera. It requires so much energy for me that doing the Etsy store felt doable, all things considered. So anyways, the reason I share about the Etsy store is because I need that to bring in the residual income in order to pay for the virtual assistant, which then will do the production part for the podcast so I can launch season 2. So that's why I shared that. All right. So what happened the week that Amara ended up in the hospital? Like, how did she get there? Because y'all, it was crazy and terrifying. So we're going to start on a Monday in April. And I noticed between Monday and Wednesday that she started eating less and less and less. And this child loves her formula. And she was leaving like an ounce here, an ounce there, a few ounces here. And by Wednesday, she was leaving almost like, I remember Wednesday night, she had like left almost a full bottle. And I was like, what is wrong with my child? I had also noticed by Wednesday that she was really lethargic. Like, scary lethargic. I was to the point that I texted one of my friends and I was like, hey, does teething make your baby really sleepy? Because she's not even fussy. She's just wanting to sleep all day. It's like scary lethargic. Like, what is wrong with my baby? Like, I'm happy she's not fussy, but this is strange. And she's like, no, I don't know. My kids never did that. And pretty much anytime she would feel bad, we would think it was something related to teething. She was 8 months old. Then during the day that Wednesday, while she was taking one of her naps, simultaneously, right? I'm always having like these existential crises because I really struggle between my very woo-woo spiritual side and my very analytical data brain side. And I'm always trying to reconcile these two and constantly have this very intense like inner battle going on. And it was one of those days, and I'm sitting outside under a tree trying to meditate, and I say this prayer, and I was journaling the prayer, actually. I even have it in writing. And it was something to the effect of, like, show me how to have, like, unshakable faith and an inner peace that is unshakable and a faith that is, like, unquestionable in the things that I believe in. And that was a prayer. I wanted to be, like, really grounded and centered and be unshakable by life's trials and tribulations. And I wanted to have an insane amount of faith in my spirituality because it's constantly being challenged. And that was my prayer, because I would respect a lot of really woo-woo leaders that show up in the limelight and show up with this very strong conviction in all of their woo-woo, like, spiritual beliefs, right? Things that are not mainstream. And a lot of that for me is, like, my shamanic practice. And it's not mainstream. You guys know that. That's what's mainstream is Catholicism and Christianity and all these other things. And things that are more new age is not mainstream and sometimes made fun of and sometimes woo-woo. I don't have a problem with that word, but a lot of people feel it's, like, you know, a word that is, that kind of shuts it down. So anyways, that was kind of like the little mini existential crisis I was having that day. And bro, the next day, it's Thursday, and Amara wakes up again, super sleepy, pale, and now her lips are chapped and she's dehydrated. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, this is not teething. Like, you don't wake up pale and with your lips chapped. Like, this makes no sense. And she was chugging, like, a bunch of water. She was super thirsty. So some of the symptoms of DKA are the being lethargic, like, frequent urination, like, tons, because the body's trying to get rid of the sugar. So again, I didn't, mind you, I don't know anything about babies other than, like, I'm learning as I go with Amara. And I'm thinking, oh, she has leaky diapers because she's a baby and she wakes up at night and we bought overnight diapers so she would have less leaks. Little did I know the leaks were not a baby thing, but, like, her trying to get rid of all the sugar in her system. I'm like, fuck, you know. And so frequent urination, extreme thirst, being really lethargic, and what else? The difficulty breathing, the rapid breathing, which is what she had that Thursday morning. And I was like, oh, hell no. Like, her breathing has changed. We need to get to a pediatrician immediately. So I call, I make an appointment. They immediately give me, like, the first appointment that day. We go to the pediatrician and they do labs on her. And while they're pulling the blood, I left her with Daryl because I'm really squirmy and I did not want to be in the room while they were trying to take blood out of her. Not because of the blood, like, squirmy in the sense, like, the empath, like, oh my God, you're putting a needle in my child. I can't handle, like, seeing her cry and that type of, like, the mom stuff. So I'm in the car. And at that moment, when I was in the car, I was like, something's not right. I wouldn't even doubt that the ambulance is on their way right now. Like, something is majorly wrong. They call me back inside and the doctor's like, I need to talk to both of you. Her blood sugar levels are 485. She has diabetes. And we were like, what the hell do you mean she has diabetes? None of us are diabetic. Like, how, then what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, this just happens out of nowhere. And I'm like, is it her diet? I mean, she's a baby. She has formula and baby food. Like, I'm not giving this girl even house food, like, nothing. She eats normal, just organic baby food and organic formula. This is it. And they're like, it has nothing to do with the diet. This is just 85% of type 1 diabetics have zero family history of diabetes. And it's one of those things that you're like, what the fuck, where does this come from? So at that point, he goes, you need to go to the children's hospital. He's like, go home, pack a bag, don't stay for lunch. Because I was like, how much time do we have? Like, what level of emergency is this? And he said, no, it's an emergency. Like, don't go home and eat lunch. Just go home, pack your bags, because you're going to be there for a few days. And that was it. So we take Amara. She's all like sleepy and pale, not wanting to eat anything other than drink water. But she's throwing up the water too. That's the other symptom, is throwing up. We get to the house. In my mind, between the pediatrician and the house and the car, I had already packed all the bags in my head. So as soon as I got home, I ransacked the house, packed the bag for Amara, for me, and for Daryl. And we did that in like 15 minutes, jumped in the car. Meanwhile, Daryl's trying to give her water and she's throwing up like all over the place. I pack everything, we get in the car, and I'm just praying. I'm in the back seat with her and I'm just like, please, you know, mind you, the doctor didn't tell me that this is like lethal, that you can literally die from going into DKA or go into a coma, but he didn't share that with me. And I'm just sitting there and I'm freaking out and I'm praying and praying and praying and praying the entire way to the hospital. And then I get to the hospital and they say only one parent is allowed because it's COVID. So I am livid that it's only one person allowed and I'm scared and to do this by myself with her, and Daryl has to drop me off. And I get there and I'm just like, my baby is going into DKA, her sugar's 45. And they're like, oh, fill out this form. I'm like, what the fuck do you mean fill out this form? Do you not see this baby? Like, get this girl inside. And they're just, I have to fill out stupid form, and nurses are coming out and I'm just making a scene on purpose because they have this saying, like, niño que no llora no mama. Like, I want people to come and do something about this, and I'm not going to be quiet about it. I need to act like this is an emergency. And it is, and it was. So finally, we get into the ER and they can't put an IV in her for hours because her veins are so, she's a baby. So to get an IV in a baby is a pain in the ass. And then on top of that, her veins were so dehydrated. She was so dehydrated. And that was grueling as a mom to watch. Just, they're pinching her everywhere trying to find a vein. Oh my God, it was horrible. I think they got a so-so vein, gave her some, it's blurry at this point. I don't remember if it was there, if it was in the ICU. I want to say that I don't even think they made it in the ER to get a vein. I don't remember. But we were there in the ER, and then they transferred us to ICU like a couple hours later. We're in ICU. Then it gets even worse because the IV she had, I think, didn't work. They did a PICC line, which is when they get like a vein in the groin, like a, I don't know, something else that's way worse than getting a vein in an arm. And at that moment, I'm standing in the ICU, like her room, and I take a step back and I just look at everything, and there's 8 people working on her. And it's one of those surreal moments of, oh my God, this is really happening. And this is a humongous emergency. And there are 8 professionals right now trying to work on her and to get this vein and treating her. Like, this is insane. And I'm terrified. And they're trying to get this vein. And I'm, oh God. Anyways, so long story short, they get it. Finally, they get fluids into her. I had many meltdowns in the background. And finally, they hook it up. They let Daryl come in because of her age and situation. So I'm not alone anymore. And that first night, yeah, by Thursday night, we were ready. ICU, Daryl was with me, and we spent the night together. By the following day, they finally stabilized her sugar enough to put us in the regular hospital. And then for the next 10 days, it was just learning how to manage her diabetes, her numbers, all the lab work, because she was testing negative for diabetes type 1. And so if it's not that, then what the hell? And so we're doing that. The diabetes educators are coming every day. And imagine, you're like exhausted. You haven't slept. You're terrified. it's just like, I was like a deer in headlights, you know. The diabetes education team comes, and they're trying to show you how to take care of a diabetic baby. And I had my iPad with me, and I just used one of the apps that records the voice while I take notes. And I told the guy, I said, look, I have no bandwidth to learn new information right now, but you're going to talk and I'm going to write, and this is recording what you're saying, and I can play this back later, and I'm going to cry while I'm writing. And it just is what it is. So we need to do this in bite-sized chunks. I need you to organize all the data for me. I need charts. I need graphs. I need schedules. I'm a type A personality. Give it to me in this package so I can consume this information and apply it immediately. And that's what we did. And it worked. It worked. And for days, a few days, they're like, all right, are you ready to, you know, give her, start practicing giving her injections? Mind you, 2 weeks prior to that, I was putting her to bed, and I'm holding her to put her to bed, and we're, you know, pacing the room, waiting for her to fall asleep on my shoulder, and I'm just thinking random stuff, and one of those thoughts was, oh, I want to get her ears pierced after the pandemic's over and take her to the mall or whatever and get her ears pierced. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to do that? How am I going to sit through her getting her ears pierced? Like, that is going to kill me, right? Now, fast forward, she's diabetic, and I have to learn how to give my baby injections on a regular basis. Fuck my life. Are you serious? Are you serious? Like, I could not believe the contrast, you know? So the nurses finally convince me, and I start doing it, and it wasn't that bad, and she didn't cry. And like everything, we just adapt as humans. We just figure shit out. We just get through it and adapt and take it a minute at a time and figure it out. And you have support and resources and education and love, and things just kind of come together, you know, from any madness. And that's where we are now. Now I inject her. I'm the one that injects her. Daryl usually holds her. I mean, we take turns, but I'm usually the one that does. I don't know why. It just worked out that way. And it's no big deal. You know, now I'm used to it, and so is she. And she doesn't cry when I inject her, very rarely. She kind of just rubs it after, like, I'm like, ow, like, what was that? Even when I check her blood the old school way, you know, with the AccuCheck on her finger, the finger pricks, she doesn't cry for that either. It's amazing. But yeah, we went home. So going back to the hospital, they finished the diabetes education. They gave us all of the equipment. We went home with like 2 backpacks full of diabetes equipment and needles and lancets and needle drums and refills and gauze and alcohol pads and this type of needle because she's so little, and that other type of needle to dilute the insulin because she's so little. And even the diabetes team is like, we haven't had a baby this small in like 20 years because it's really rare for them to get diabetes younger than 2 years old. So they had like little experience with infants having diabetes, which was not comforting at all, which led me to get a second opinion from the University of Florida. And we went home with no answers too, mind you, because she tested negative for type 1. And obviously it's not type 2, and everything else came back fine, and her thyroid came back fine. So we also went home with like a diabetes treatment, but no diagnosis. So we were still in this very like weird phase of like, is this going to pass? Is it going to be type 1? Is it something else? Is it the other type of diabetes, the genetic diabetes that has a much easier treatment and that she can potentially grow out of? That would be amazing if it was that other weird type of diabetes called Moody. You know, what is this? So we came home and I went into Virgo mode and organized all her diabetes equipment, moved her crib back into my bedroom, had a rolling cart with all her equipment, reading through all the material. Actually, no, I could hardly read through any of the material. Actually, I just did what I had to do, which is give her insulin. And we had to deal with these. She has a Dexcom monitor and it's like this thing that staples onto her. It's a needle that shoots into her body and shoots a little catheter into it. And then it comes out again and just leaves a little flexible catheter in. And then that tells my phone or our phones where her sugar levels are. And that's a lifesaver when it works, but it's made for kids 2 years and older. So it's supposed to last 10 days, but with her, it only lasts 4 to 6 if we're lucky. So in changing that thing, it probably took me 2 months before I stopped having major anxiety around changing the Dexcom. Oh, yeah, not fun. So anyways, let's come home. We have gotten used to the routine. We work closely with the diabetes team monitoring her numbers. We had follow-ups. You have to keep her in range. They said that they didn't even want us calorie counting yet because she's a baby. So just to give her her normal like things that she was eating. And then we just give her the insulin that she needs based on a sliding scale. So it's all these crazy things you have to learn that you would never learn if you weren't in this situation. And wow, guys, wow. It's crazy because you look at her, you're like, but you're so happy and healthy. Like, how can something be wrong inside of you? But that's like what we say about everybody almost with an illness, right? Like when you get some crazy fucking cancer diagnosis or something, you're like, but you look fine on the outside and shit's just crazy on the inside. It's like, oh my God, you know. But everything is perspective. I joined these Facebook groups for kids with, you know, moms of kids with diabetes. And let me tell you that there are some other families that have it significantly worse. They have multiple children with type 1. They have children with type 1 and other diseases together. They have, you know, just way worse situations. And within the scope of things, she's doing amazing. We hardly have any major scares. We haven't had to return to the hospital. 3 months after she came home, they retested her for type 1 and she came back positive. So it's official that she has type 1 diabetes. She could live a fully healthy life with zero complications as long as her diabetes is managed appropriately. Those stories of the past of like losing toes and this and that and all sorts of craziness are because of the way they used to treat diabetes before, and they've changed the treatment a few years ago. So now the way it's handled, they're really helps you have a fully healthy life without any crazy side effects or complications. So it makes me happy to see all these really healthy, happy kids, her, you know, her age and older, thriving in these Facebook groups and receiving all these comforting messages from them. And just, this is where we are, man. This is what's happened since that episode. Like, oh my God, you know, how I've dealt with this emotionally and mentally has been interesting. I really tried not to go back on an antidepressant because I was on one for my postpartum depression after I had the baby because I had a traumatic childbirth and then my dad died. So plus the stress of the pandemic. So I was on something then and I didn't like it was good. because it gave me the bandwidth to launch the podcast, but I was simultaneously dead inside. And I think I had talked about that in another episode. So when the shit was hitting the fan with Amara, I was using CBD and flower essences. And then I hired an herbalist to work with me who continued to make custom flower essence blends for me and other herbal tinctures, and that was working well. That was working okay, but it wasn't enough. And when I got the official like diagnosis in June, it was actually in the middle of June, not July, for her diabetes, that really made me spiral. And when you're a mom, you just have to show up and you just have to take care of your child. You can't afford to be depressed. Like, who has time to be depressed? This child needs to thrive. So I don't have the luxury of like sitting and crying and not taking care of her, and you just need to function. And that was my priority. And as much as I've managed to manage my anxiety all of these years, this last decade, with meditation and exercise and art and therapy and coaching and just all of these different approaches, I don't have the luxury with the lifestyle I have right now to sit and do the meditating and the journaling and all these things that were amazing tools for me before I had a baby that worked phenomenally. And I was able to manage my anxiety completely, or it was manageable. It wasn't that it eliminated it completely. It was definitely manageable, and I was able to process everything usually on my own between shamanic journeying, therapy, exercise, and meditation were like my go-tos. Forget it. Once I had the kid, then it's impossible. So I gave in to trying antidepressants, and it worked. What can I say? It works, and it gives me the bandwidth I need to do what I have to do and to take care of my child and myself and my family in this house and just show up for life. You know, am I living that super magical internal world that I had prior to having a baby right now? No. Is it still there? Yes. Do I tap in to that magic, to what's that space that, oh my God, into the vortex that Abraham Hicks always, you know, talks about, tapped in, tuned in into that space? No, I'm not there. I know it's there, but it's hard. It's hard, man. So after working with the herbalist for about 2 months, I gave up and I said, I need something stronger. Like, I need to be that person right now that says, fuck it. I need to take a pill that's $7 a month instead of 100 and something between the visit and the tinctures and stuff like that. And I need something that works quick and is going to shut off the anxiety, the severe anxiety and the depression, because the depression was bad. I mean, it's crazy because I never usually suffer from depression. Usually my thing is anxiety, but fuck, between my dad dying, the pandemic, and the diabetes, like, I have reached levels of depression I didn't know were possible for me. And there was a point that I was crying all day, every day. I needed to make her milk. I am crying while I'm making her milk. I'm crying while I'm feeding her. I'm crying while I'm putting her to bed. I'm crying while I'm playing with her. I was crying, 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 crying all the time. And I'm like, this, I can't. This isn't good for her. It's not good for me. This sucks. I need help. A lot of natural stuff is only getting me so far. Maybe if I would have hung in longer with the natural stuff, it would have eventually done its thing. And that's how natural stuff is. It's slower usually to work, and you have to commit for a longer amount of time. And that's great. And I'm glad that those things exist. And it was working prior to her diagnosis. The CBD was enough. So like the CBD was being successful, and the flower essences were working for me to process the grieving, like those that I was going through, and the normal stress of having a baby with the pandemic. Like that formula worked. But that's it. Once they slapped on the diabetes or Bilate, there was just no way that I can get my head above water. So then I said, okay, I'm going to do this again. We talked to Daryl about it. He's like, do what you have to do, you know? And he's very like, you think I'm like into natural stuff? Yeah, right. Like nothing. You know, like he's a tree hugger way more than I am and into the natural stuff. And so he's always against all these things, but he believes in my choices and whatever I need. He's like, okay. So they put me on Wellbutrin. That was not a good thing. I did the Wellbutrin and it got me super sick and nauseous and dizzy. My vertigo started to like peek its head again. And I was like, hell no, get me off this shit. I was on it for 2 weeks and I was like so sick the entire time. I called the psychiatrist again and I said, you need to get me off this thing. Try something else. I need you to swap this out. So they put me on this other thing called Venafloxacin. And it was great. And it has been great. And this is working much better than Zoloft, which is what they gave me the first time for the postpartum depression. They gave me Zoloft. And that was great because it was like the switch was turned on, and it was like the fuck your feelings switch. And all of a sudden I was like, what feelings? And that I was dead inside. And I just went to work and I launched the podcast, and I birthed 28 episodes with Zoloft dead inside, but super productive and not depressed. It was just, I had to do what I had to do and it worked for what it was. But then I was like, all right, I can't feel music. Like if I can't feel music, like in my soul, and I'm not like, if I'm not crying from the music I hear, and I can't live like that, because music is like a lifeline for me. I have to know, I need it. And with the Zoloft, I was like dead inside, and I would be like, and I was so like not connected to who I am normally. I'm like, I know who Natalie is. I have spent a lot of time with myself and doing the work and developing a relationship with myself. Like, I know who I am, and like, I am not that person on this medication. I need to get off of it. And I felt stable enough to get off, and I did. And that's when I switched over to CBD and flower essences, and I was working until the diagnosis. Now, fast forward, I'm on Venafloxacin now, and I'm chilling. I don't feel dead inside. I can still cry to music. I cried my eyes out when I saw Vivo, and I dance and sing to the soundtrack every morning. And it's okay. And life is now this new normal, where it's normal for us to manage her diabetes, and I'm constantly checking her numbers, and we have to get up in the middle of the night at 2 to check where she's at. And her numbers are much more stable, and we're used to the injections, and we're used to diluting the insulin, and we're used to communicating with her team now. And I've made friends with other moms of children with diabetes, with type 1. And voila, this is now life post God say, what, you girl, you complaining? Wait, hold up, hold my beer. You want to have unshakable faith? You want to be like, learn how to be super grounded in the chaos? Better. I got something for you. And let me tell you that after what happened with Amaro, I had to go to therapy because I thought, because of that prayer, that I somehow manifested this madness, right? And I felt guilty for that prayer. Oh my God. I just think it was shitty timing, honestly, now in retrospect. But at the time, I was like, it was my fault. This is what I get for asking God about and having faith and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, it was intense. But let me tell you that it worked, because I have more faith now than ever in God, what he means to me. And I've learned to let go of everything. My life came to a complete and utter halt when this all happened. Everything that I was planning for my business went out the window. I had a webinar scheduled for that Saturday of when this went down. I had all of these plans and everything just out the window. It was just me and this baby and learning how about diabetes, and that was it. And sleep and nothing else. And the gift in that is that it made me super present. Extremely present, gave me another appreciation about being a mom. I enjoy her much, I want to say much more, even more. Like, it was just a really big adjustment for me to become a mom. Like, true story. I know some of you know this, some of you don't, but it was just a really big adjustment for me. It just is what it is, and I'll probably do another episode on that one day. But yeah, I forgot where I was going with that. I wonder if you can hear me pacing in the room. This is like no fancy equipment. This is me on my AirPods with the voice memo app, because this is the only way I can do this. If I don't do it this way, I can't do this podcast. I need to get creative. So all my fancy equipment sitting in my office, which I can't use because Daryl's working and we share an office, and I'm not going to kick him out because he has to do his thing. So this is what it is. This is doing it messy, doing it sloppy, and just doing it anyways. I hope that you don't hear me dragging my feet on this carpet as I walk and pace back and forth while I record this. But yeah, y'all, this is just real life. This is how it's been for me. This is how I've survived this diagnosis. This is how we adapt as humans. This is just fuck, man. That's really, there is no words. That's just how I feel. You're just like, oh no. All right. I'm good. I think things can calm down now, and they have. I am so happy to be focusing on my creativity again and being able to put out my Cutie Crew illustrated characters again, and specifically create stuff for little girls to bring them lots of magic and warm fuzzies to their hearts, and use that as a residual income, because I am not a fan for exchanging my time in exchange for money, because time is the most valuable thing you have. I am a huge fan of waking up in the morning and seeing my bank account growing by itself, making money while I sleep. That is the name of the game, you know. And although I love being of service and having clients and doing either the business operations types work or doing the intuitive readings or shamanic healing, I love it all, but it takes a lot of energy for me. And right now, for this moment, the business model of creating print-on-demand products and using Printful to do order fulfillment and the printing and all that stuff is, it's so helpful and so easy. So if anybody also wants to do something like that, hit me up. I'll be more than happy to guide you. But yeah, this is how we just gotta pivot in life. And I pivot, like I joke around with my friend Anya Hildreth, who's another life coach. And that was one of the episodes a while back where I just say, like, she loves how I pivot in my business. You know, like what, like nothing. And I'm like, girl, my whole life is a pivot. Like, this is just, it just is what it is. And I've made peace with it. And this is how I move through the world. And I can pivot easily to accommodate my needs or the needs of others. And this is it. So my latest pivot is this Etsy store. And I've launched that and I'm super excited, and it sits well with my being. A lot of this journey as an entrepreneur is that you got to see, like, what business model works for you. Is it like showing up one-on-one? Is it like huge events? Is it online classes? Is it like group coaching? Is it, you know, one-on-one, like in-person stuff? Is it just sitting and creating behind the scenes and then hiring a team to like put it out into the world? Like, there's so many different ways to show up in the world and be of service, so many different types of business models, but you're not going to know like what works for you until you try it. So I've tried a lot of things, and I know what sits really well with my being, with my personality, with my energy, because if you're an introvert, and if you're an HSP introvert or an empath introvert, you know what I'm talking about. Like, it's really important to manage our energy levels and our bandwidth and our mind and how we feel this day. And it's a lot of work to be like really sensitive in this world and to be an entrepreneur and do things that are required for marketing and collaboration as an HSP introverted empath-like entrepreneur. It's kind of sometimes a clusterfuck. So right now I just learned, thanks to Daryl, that who pushed me for months and months to start the Etsy store, that, man, this type of business model really sits well with my being right now. Like, this feels good and feels manageable, and I like it. So let's see how this goes. I will keep you all posted. And that's it. That is it. That is all I've got to say. And I just want to say thank you for those who have stuck around and are waiting for season 2. I really appreciate it. I've gotten feedback about the podcast recently that was great, and thank you so much for all of you who have taken the time to listen to every single episode. Like, that is an honor that you've spent so much time with me. If there's anything I can do for you, please hit me up on Instagram at Natalie1Love with the number 1. The link is in the show notes. Until next time, I don't know what the next episode's going to be, if I'm going to do another bonus episode or if I'm going to launch season 2. I don't know, but that's okay, because now I just chill in the unknown, right? I have let go. I am chilling in the unknown, hyperventilating. No, just kidding. And let's see. So until next time, y'all, take care.
Thank you guys for being here. I know that your time is the most valuable thing you have. It means the world to me that you're here. There are many more cool episodes coming, so go subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. If this episode inspired you, please leave a review so this show can reach more people who need healing. Thank you for being here. I love you guys. See you in the next episode.